It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Daryl Peel. Daryl is an Oklahoma State Livestock Economist. We're at CattleCon 24 in Orlando. Daryl, great to see you.
It's good to see you, too. It's great to be here.
Okay. Interesting time. Really, when you think of where the cattle industry is today, much different place than we've been in the last 20 years. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in terms of, I mean, we talk about the cattle cycle, and yes, you can paint this in the, as a part of a cycle, but we know that 10 years ago we had a low that was driven by drought, so it was an exaggerated low, if you will. We're in that even more so now. Obviously, drought is the reason why we've liquidated so hard the last, now 3 years. And so, it is an unusual time. And if you just want, you know, if you want superlatives, I mean, the beef cow herd, given what USDA has told us in these new numbers, is the smallest since 1961, and the total cattle inventory in the U.S. is the smallest since 1951. So we haven't been this small in a long, long time in this industry.
So obviously some of this will be weather related. Are there other factors that we're seeing into these numbers? Just fewer operators? I mean, is there more to it than just drought?
Well, I think drought is the major driver of how we got here. But I think there's a number of other factors that play into sort of where do we go from here, or how fast are we going to go somewhere different. I think we're smaller than we need to be. I mean, beef production is going to decline again in 2024 and probably 2025. The market will make use of that. We'll probably wind up pricing a smaller supply even higher, but it means some people won't eat as much beef because we won't have as much beef. So I say all that to say that I think, you know, broadly speaking, we're smaller than we need to be as an industry. There's plenty of market support out there for us to be a bigger industry. So I think we are going to try to rebuild when we get a chance. But that process is going to play out a little bit different, I think, from this point on, just given where we are and how we got here.
Okay, here's what's kind of interesting. Some of the areas that were in deep drought 10 years ago are not in that deep drought that we saw 10 years ago. We're seeing, and I'm using this probably just driving by at 75, but I am seeing cattle in places grazing that I haven't seen in probably 10 years. Is that just me?
Well, you know, one of the differences this time from 10 years ago, and I think this comparison to that last situation is very valid because it's very strong in producers' minds, and I think it has a lot to do with how their expectations are forming. And that drought, as you said, was so centered in the southern plains, Texas, Oklahoma, and spilling out around the edges of that. It drove the national numbers, but it was very confined. And as a result of that, the rest of the industry actually was poised to sort of recoup from that much quicker. This drought, you know, it's moved around, and long-term droughts tend to do that. So it's really started in 2020. 2021 was mostly in the northern plains. 2022, it moved back in the central plains and southern plains. 2023, it was kind of all over the place. At the end of 2023, it was in the Delta region pretty seriously and still is to some extent. So I say all that to say that I think this last several years has affected a lot wider set of producers. And so it's a different process to recover from that than when a few producers are more severely impacted. This is a much broader based kind of an impact, and it's going to be a little bit broader based process to recover from.
So we could probably see some rebuilding in certain areas, but maybe not widespread, which brings up the question, can we start rebuilding?
You know, the way I've been looking at the numbers for a while, and I'll rerun them with these new USDA numbers, but I don't think it's going to change very much. Looks to me like the best we can hope for in 2024 would be to sort of hold stable. Stop liquidating, so stop getting smaller. That's good. And in fact, that's not uncommon. If you look at cattle cycles historically, they kind of have a flat spot on the bottom. They typically have a flat bottom there where there'll be 2 years that aren't very much different, and then you start regrowing. But the way I look at it, this time, 2024, flat to, and depending on what drought does, could continue liquidation, but the best we could hope for would be flat, limited potential to growth and to grow in 2025. So I think we're talking about an extended process before we could really ramp up to a faster pace of expansion.
Sometimes we talk about the word impulse, and we think of it from a buying perspective. But when we look at the cattle industry, can we use impulse in a little different way?
You know, if you dig into the heifer data that we have, and really it's more recent, for about 22 or 3 years now, USDA has been giving us, within that replacement heifer number we get every year, they've been giving us a breakout of the subset of those heifers that are bred. And what becomes important there is you can say, well, those are 2-year-old heifer, coming 2-year-old heifers, right? So they're from the calf crop 2 years ago. And then if you subtract the bred heifers from the total, what's left are heifers that we're calling replacements, but they're heifer calves from last year's calf crop. So we're working with two different sets of heifers here. And I say all that to say that when you start trying to follow through time those different sets of heifers, and then you look at how many heifers are going to calve this year versus how many we said we were keeping to breed last year, it's obvious in the data that what happens is that there's a fair number of producers that didn't call them replacement heifers, but we have feeder heifers or stocker heifers out in the country, and they wind up getting bred. And so I call it impulse heifer breeding as opposed to the ones that were planned going into the thing. And I've been digging into this data a lot more because I'm very interested in this process of how we're going to recover from the current situation. And what I find is that typically, or at least in the last cattle cycle, there was a big jump in that impulse breeding in the early stages of expansion. The guys that were planning to breed were slowly building their heifer inventories, but a bunch of other guys jumped on the bandwagon to facilitate that more rapid herd expansion. And then those were the ones that quit doing it at the top. So they were, you know, they I say all that to say that I think what we're going to see here, the USDA data tells us we're not bringing very many bred heifers or heifer calves into 2024. But what we might see if expectations change and if Mother Nature facilitates a better prospect for us, we might see a sizable jump in this impulse breeding where a lot of heifers that are out there right now that they're stockers or they're feeder cattle or maybe not spoken for yet, and they might wind up getting into the breeding pool. And so that would be the place where we could start this quicker.
Very interesting. So I can't wait to find out more of your data along the way. You look at 24, and again, you've already kind of summarized, you know, what you think is coming. Is there anything else we need to keep an eye on? Maybe imports? Maybe the export picture? Is there anything else we just need to glance over at?
Well, you know, the imports and exports started in 2023 to behave as I would expect, honestly, in the current market conditions. I mean, we had record beef exports in 2022, and we expected in 2023 they would start to fall, and they did. But we're in a tighter beef supply situation. Prices are higher, and on top of that, we've had a strong dollar most of the time. So those are three headwinds for exports. By the same token, as beef production falls in the U.S., and particularly as cull cow slaughter drops, when we don't have to liquidate and try not to to cull as many cows, that's one of the bases for stopping liquidation, then our processing beef that supports our ground beef market that's so important in the U.S., and so that becomes much more attractive. Prices are higher, so we start importing more beef. And we're seeing that. I think it'll probably continue as we go forward. It doesn't change. I mean, none of those are – they're at the margin. So none of those are changes that overwhelm or offset what's going to happen in the U.S. industry. But they modify it a little bit around the edges in terms of, you know, and it really comes down to how much our consumers impacted. If we import a little more beef, then there's a little bit less pain for consumers with reduced beef production in the U.S. If we export a little less, we keep a little bit more of what we are producing that's smaller in the domestic market. So it's really moderating it from a consumer standpoint as much as anything.
Daryl, so great to see you. Thanks for your time, and we wish you the best.
Thank you. It's good to visit with you.
Again, Dr. Daryl Peel, Oklahoma State Livestock Economist, on today's Agribusiness Report.